Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
As you instructed, BDI was charged with providing a task order to meet the goals that you set for us at the last meeting of relocating the intermediate storage tank and pond and the treatment plant itself away from the 24-acre parcel and the 100-acre parcel to the 80-acre parcel. They provided, at my request, two options for you.
This is Ed Spears, the city manager for the city of Milton in the post-wastewater treatment plant abandonment period of Milton's none-too-pleasant current history. Remember, they had a permitted, ready-to-go, designed, paid-for, or very close to paid-for plant that was going to go. The plant itself was going to be on a parcel, 24 acres, that is next to the Blackwater River. It was not going to discharge into the Blackwater River. The current plant actually does discharge into the Blackwater River, and part of the consent order from the Department of Environmental Protection is that they have to get that effluent out of the Blackwater River by next December. That is not going to happen now. More on that in a moment. But this is Ed coming back after the meeting where the city council, because of the vote, you know, elections matter, decided to abandon all the work that's been done for all these years to create that plant at that location. And then, you know, because a group of citizens got very, very worked up about this and led a coalition to sell their vision of the reality, and they sold it to enough people that they got their whole slate elected, and with the new people in power and the city council, they voted to abandon that entire project. So then, which was designed by BDI, Baskerville Donovan. So Ed's talking about, okay, well, if we're not going to do that, what are we going to do? And you got to move the plant, if you know, away from that site. You've got to change the way you have the effluent discharge. There's a couple of parcels in mind. It doesn't really matter to you so much to understand the, you know, the 24 and the 100 and the 80-acre site. It's, again, you know, these are details that matter to the people doing it, but they don't much matter to you. So two options. If you're going to have a wastewater treatment plant, and by the way, just like for background, they're out of capacity in Milton. So if you build a new home or a business, they cannot treat your wastewater. You basically have to go with a septic system or find somebody else, and nobody else can do it. So they're on the verge of having to turn people away or, you know, say no to businesses, all of that kind of stuff. There is a definite need to have a wastewater treatment plant facility in Milton. For years, it's been known, and it's finally come to a crux in conjunction with the need to get the effluent out of the river, which is kind of a separate issue in a way, but they're very closely connected. Okay, so what are the two options? Option number one.
One is a fast-track option in layman's terms, pick it up and move it in its same format, in its same treatment methodology, in its same disposal methodology to that parcel, reconfigure it to fit, make sure everything works there, and get that permitted as quickly as possible. And as of right now, that process is about 465 days at a cost of just over $2.5 million.
So 465 days is, you know, a year plus 100 days, so 15 months. To take the existing design and try to reconfigure it for a new parcel that's less objectionable to the concerned citizens of Milton Group, or, you know, the Save Our Blackwater people, that I call them the Pitchfork Posse, whatever. So $2.5 million to design it, 15 months in order to make that happen. Option number two, that's to take the existing and just move it, which you can't just pick it up and move it. There's a lot because of terrain, the way it was designed to be engineered and, you know, permitting and all of that kind of stuff. Okay, so 15 months.
Other option I asked them was for a true blank piece of paper to begin with a public input process with an exploration of new treatment options and methodologies, new disposal methodologies, what will work best on this property and the adjacent property that we own, and to go through that academic exercise first, and then allow council to make the decisions of methodologies going forward, then design that, then permit that. As you can expect, that is a much lengthier process at
675
days. 675 days, so right at 2 years, and at roughly $6 million for that option.
So you're going to have to go $6 million. You're going to have to wait almost 2 years, and that would be to start over entirely and decide what the community wants and what standard of treatment that they want it to go to. I have a brain that works a certain way, and so when I heard that it was going to be 2 years and $6 million...
all I could think of was, we can make it better, faster, stronger.
Because, you know, that's how my brain works. So the better, faster, stronger wastewater treatment plant is going to take at least 2 years to even get into the, shovel going kind of phase. But don't worry, when we get done with it, it's going to be even better than you could possibly imagine. Anyway... sorry, I can't help myself. Okay, so back to the real discussion. One thing that's kind of interesting is in designing it, the capacity of the current plant is I think it's 2 million gallons a day. The new plant was going to be 2 million gallons a day, but with the modular capacity to expand to 4, 6, or 8. You know, like, you don't have to build a whole new plant. You just have to add the elements that would do that. And basically Ed Spear says, look, if we're going to design for 2 or 3, we might as well design for 4. And so that's good that the new plant design is actually going to start at 4 million gallons per day, which means surplus capacity for the growth. That's the idea. The other good news, and this was a real surprise, kudos to the staff. The staff is amazing, no matter what the city council is. The staff is amazing because on the verge of losing 4 of the $5 million of American Rescue Plan money that they had been using toward this project, and it was just going to basically go out of the account. The deadline was, remember, December 31st in order to encumber that money. They found a way to preserve that money for the city.
If the fast track option is approved tonight, staff has identified enough eligible projects to preserve 100% of the ARPA funding for the city of Milton. If the blank page option is chosen, that would not qualify simply because of the length of that particular project being at 2 years.
So that's great work. I mean, that's genuinely great work by the staff. Also, because of the expanded capacity, you're going to need more acreage. That's already been a challenge to find the spray field or rib facility. Rapid infill basin just means that it's a different kind of soil where it can basically go directly down into the water. Spray fields, they kind of, you know, it's like spraying on a lawn. I mean, it's not quite like that, but it's real close to that. When you do spray fields, you have to have excess storage capacity in case there's a hurricane or a storm that overflows with water, basically, you know, so that you have too much water in the soil. You can't use that mechanism for the treated effluent to go into. So when you hear them, if you ever hear them talking about having a storage capacity, that's what they're talking about. Ribs don't need that because the ribs, you know, process the water very, very quickly. That's rapid. That's kind of in the name for it. Price tag. Remember I told you I keep using the term, but it's fair flushed. The 60 or 70, there's some fudge here, 50 at the very minimum, but more like $60 or $70 million of grant money and everything else that they had going to pay for the permitted, ready-to-go plant that they decided that they didn't want on that location because of what I consider to be the unfounded, outrageous fears of the people who were selling their vision, like I said, of reality. So what's the new plant going to cost? Oh, it's going to be a whole lot cheaper, obviously.
And our best current estimates as of today, in today's dollars, we have a deficit of $90,600,000 to build a 4 million gallon plant and disposal area.
Now it's 90. And some people that I have talked to seem to think that it's more like 100, 110 by the time all is said and done. Okay, so what do we do? Well, Casey Powell, and Casey is one of the, you know, he won without being opposed, and he had been one of the people on the other side. So he's in the minority on the new council for having favored the old plan. And Casey says, well, look, we have to process the existing effluent out of the river. Because, again, the current treatment plant puts treated effluent into the Blackwater River, a very common thing. But there's salt water is intruding up the river from the bay, and because of the salt water intrusion, not because of the effluent, the salt water is coming up, and that's why you have to move it out of that. You have to basically pipe it somewhere else and pump it somewhere else and spray that water somewhere else. Well, we get fined as a city if you don't do that. And he brings that up and he says, okay, y'all, you voted to do this. What's your plan?
Well, what are we going to do to solve this problem that we have for our citizens? Our citizens don't care where it goes as long as it's flowing, but they will care if it's backing up in their house. So, I mean, they will care if the new business that comes in can't come to the city of Milton because they can't connect to our sewer.
Yeah, I mean, you made a vote to tell people they can't connect to our sewer, new businesses can't come because we're at capacity. By the way, we're also going to get fined by DEP starting next year if we don't solve the effluent that's currently being processed at the plant that is in a low-lying area and very vulnerable to flooding. And that means we've got a year and a half to 2 years of increased vulnerability because we won't have, you know, the new plant won't be designed in time if we even do a new plant. Plus, BDI, y'all basically voted that they were wrong in putting the plant on, you know, in designing a plant in that location, saying that it was okay. All of you amateur engineers decided that you knew better than one of the most reputable engineering firms in our area. So why would you have them be the ones to design the new plant?
And I have full faith in BDI. I've had full faith in all the project work that they've done for us in the past. But that doesn't seem to be the overarching opinion, obviously, because the belief is that the current plant design that was permitted passed all the regulations that it needed, and DEP permits and environmental permits that were given, the idea was that plant was not sufficient and it was not engineered correctly. So I'm at a loss as to how we're supposed to move forward in a productive manner in this project.
Which is a completely fair comment. You know, he was not at the meeting. He would have, I assume, voted the other way than from the majority. But he's basically, he had to leave halfway through. It was like the installation meeting, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so he's saying, look, you all made this choice. What's your plan? Well, Ed Spears gave him two plans, 15 months to 2 years, $2.5 million to $6 million. You know? See, I'm teaching them how to remember the number. It's real easy to remember. Because I know what the number is. Oh, it's worse than that, by the way, because the existing plant is like running on its last legs. You know, they're putting baling wire and twine and duct tape and MacGyvering it together as they continue to ask for exemptions and extensions from DEP. Ed Spears.
Signed earlier this week the forms to submit our permit renewal for our existing plant. And it hasn't been submitted yet, but they're in the final stages of doing that. And the one of the questions is, how will you dispose of the discharge? And the permit renewal says it will be discharged into the Blackwater River until some point in time in the future. That's unknown. It does request that the administrative order be terminated and that the city of Milton be allowed to fall in line with the remainder of the state, which is to remove any discharge from the surface waters of the state of Florida to December 31st of 2032.
So we're asking for them to ignore the order that they've given us already. We're asking at the least for an extension. And if you could please maybe just extend our current operating permit, even though we're not complying with your requirements of how we do that operation, pretty please. It's one thing if you're in the process of building a replacement, like if you can show them, hey, we're working on it, we got this thing. Well, you literally in the city of Milton just voted to, you know, give the high sign to that plan that was ready to go and instead go with the plan. So will DEP even continue to allow you? Probably. Because what are they going to do? Say, no, all of a sudden 2 million gallons a day of wastewater sewage are not going to be treatable in the city of Milton? I mean, it's hard to imagine in a practical sense them saying that. But there's going to be fines. There's going to be fines starting in a year. Ashley Fretwell, one of the new city council members, asks Joe Cook, the public works director.
Do we have any idea how much longer the current treatment plant can sustain at the capacity that it's getting right now?
We are almost at full capacity. We're almost to the point that we cannot take on any more capacity whatsoever. So, you know, as soon as we can get it offline is the best thing we can do. But I can't give you a definite date that it'll last 2 years or 5 years. All we can do is continue to keep it patched up and keep it running. We just had to buy one new pump, and we got to buy two more pumps for it here in the last month. So all we can do is just keep it patched up and keep it running the best we can.
Joe Cook is like the Milton version of Scotty on the Enterprise. He's great. I mean, and he is keeping it running. I mean, he's the guy who comes to them and says, it's time for us to buy a new truck for some department. And they're like, well, what's wrong with the current truck? He's like, well, nothing, but it's got 1.5 miles on it. Because he's really good and his department is really good at keeping things going. But this treatment plan is, you know, the muffler's falling off and, you know, it needs new brakes and new tires. It really needs to be a new plant. So there you go. What will happen next? I don't know. Tune in for the next installment of Days of R. Milton, because I can guarantee you this. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen next. But I guarantee you the next episode, next hour, will contain drama. This one was pretty light on the drama. There was not a lot of drama here. But it's, as often, what do I say, John? It's all set up.
Yep,
it's all set up. You got to know the background, and then you get there eventually. 525 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home, a great real estate agent is somebody who's going to advise you, answer your questions, and not just answer your questions, but help you ask better ones and remind you of or raise things that you might not think of. And, you know, it's a lot to track in thinking about a home. It really is. Buying or selling, it's a lot to track. And, you know, you want somebody who's going to really help you think about all the things that matter and make a great decision. Now, Christina and her team have sold somewhere around 200, a little short of that the last couple of years, 175, a little more than that in the prior couple of years because it was super easy to sell homes. Everybody was selling homes easily, but they've still been selling a lot of homes, about 3.5 a week. And that just gives them market knowledge, experience, and the ability to make sure they get you all the way through to the sale. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out this morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
So this new dose is, well, nope, that's not it. The price is nowhere to be found.
Mr. Green? Hi, it's all good. We've got this.
This is not just help from a Walgreens pharmacist.
Oh, new prescriptions. Cool. Let me check to see if these are the lowest cost options covered by your Medicare plan.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
This is someone supporting you every step of the way. Chat with a pharmacist today to find help saving. This is the human kind of help. Walgreens.
This is a story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over 1 million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
News Radio 92.3, get your live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Can you count, suckers? I say the future is ours. If you can count.
You can count to $6 million. 529 here on News Radio 92.3. Somebody says, thanks for the drama that reigns here in Milton and Santa Rosa County, LOL. Meanwhile, the residents of Sundial Estates have had a biannual or even more frequent sewer service rate increase from the city of Milton. I've lived here since 2014 and have seen this bill increase almost double. I assume we're paying for this monster sewer plant. No one's gone to them to complain, and I'm guilty of this too. My water bill is usually less than half of this fee every month. What can I and my neighbors do? Well, I have bad news for you. The bad news is that they had the new plant funded, and so they wouldn't have to increase your rates in order to fund this plant. If they go forward with the new plant at $90 to $100 or $110 million, Ed Spears was very clear that to the degree they have to finance that, they will have to raise your rates every month in order to pay for that. And I think, I want to say the number is $30. I'm going to look it up while David Wayne is talking, but I think it's $30 a month per every $15 million they have to bond, I think was what the number is. Anyway, I'll get it for you in a second. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Today is the National Day of Mourning for the life of Jimmy Carter. A state funeral is being held at the Washington National Cathedral. President Biden will deliver a eulogy. Every living U.S. president will be in attendance today. It's been another night of anxiety in California. Those wildfires are still raging. There are six different fires currently burning. The Palisades fire so far, over 17,000 acres. The Eaton fire, over 10,000. And so far, at least five people have lost their lives due to that fire.
No, it's a huge, it's just apocalyptic. Some of the video that we're seeing and hearing people talk about it, and my backyard's on fire, I'm leaving. It's really, really bad. And five people, I think you might have mentioned, five people have died already.
Right. Yeah.
And then you get stories about the hydrants are out of water, they're just dry, so that makes things obviously much more challenging. I was not able to find that number real quick, but I'm sorry. I know the idea is that if they can't fund, they will have to raise your monthly rate.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Five out-of-control wildfires scorching nearly 30,000 acres in Southern California. At least five people are dead. More than 100,000 residents have been evacuated. Fox's Robert Ray at the scene of the largest fire in Pacific Palisades.
Last night, they were able to put helicopters back up and planes and drop water onto that fire. They've not been able to do that in areas like here, Pacific Palisades, in the past 24 hours plus because the wind gusts were hurricane force, up to 100 miles per hour. Not expect to see those kind of winds today.
Fox's senior meteorologist Janice Dean.
That smoke is going to continue to be a huge issue for this area. So air quality alerts for many people in Southern California.
LA Mayor Karen Bass delivers an update at 11 a.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3, and right now it is 31 degrees. We've got clear skies this morning in Pensacola. A fuel tank from an F-16 fighter jet with the 96th training wing detached from a plane and landed in a neighborhood in Niceville this week.
It really sounded like that, boom, until the foundation, and you can just hear everything just shake and just be startled. And so that was pretty scary.
That's resident Christian Snowden. He talked with Channel 3. Officials say it happened on Tuesday morning. Eglin Air Force Base has not said how much fuel the tank contained at the time. It reportedly landed within feet of several homes. No injuries were reported. Officials at Eglin do say that the tank likely separated from the jet shortly after takeoff. Environmental contractors from the base are now investigating the incident. Century's mayor has resigned from office. Luis Gomez Jr. tendered his resignation during a city council meeting on Monday. He cited personal health reasons. Gomez Jr.'s last day will be this coming Friday. Alicia Johnson will serve as the city's interim mayor. Well, we are seeing reports that the state is investigating Bobby Likas Auto Service on Davis Highway. Investigators served a search warrant at that auto shop on Tuesday, closing it and turning away customers for several hours that afternoon. Channel 3 reports that customers had reported unnecessary repairs and charges and incomplete work. The Escambia Sheriff's Office also confirmed a fraud report made by a person that is supposedly familiar with the inner workings of the business. Again, this investigation is still ongoing. The Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services is asking anybody with information relevant to that investigation to contact them. Florida wants to help California deal with those wildfires. Governor DeSantis said yesterday that he's offered to assist the people of California in responding to the fires and rebuilding communities that have been devastated. He wrote on X that when disaster strikes, we come together to help our fellow Americans in any way we can. Meanwhile, volunteers from the Florida Red Cross are now heading to Los Angeles to help those who've been displaced. Well, Rick Scott wants to lock the clock. Senator Scott yesterday introducing the Sunshine Protection Act. That would put an end to changing the clocks twice a year. It would also make daylight savings time the national year-round standard. Scott says changing clocks twice a year is unnecessary and a decades-old practice that's more of an annoyance to families than a benefit. He calls the Sunshine Protection Act a common-sense change that would simplify and benefit the lives of American families. 534 at News Radio, 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast this morning.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Another cold start to the day with temperatures warming up near 50 degrees in the afternoon, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping into the 40s. Staying a bit warmer on Friday as rain moves through. We will have high rain chances throughout your afternoon, and then showers will move out. Temperatures ranging from the 50s to the 60s for highs. Overnight Friday, temperatures dropping back into the 30s. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 30 degrees in Pensacola, 30 in Milton, 31 in Gulf Breeze. Our next news is at 6 a.m. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Both the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ will be closed for trading today in honor of a national day of mourning for the late President Jimmy Carter. Bond markets are set to close early. Exchange and the NASDAQ will be closed for trading today in honor of a national day of mourning for the late President Jimmy Carter. Bond markets are set to close early. Will resume their normal schedules tomorrow. Applications for unemployment benefits fell to their lowest level in nearly a year last week, pointing to a still healthy labor market with historically low layoffs. The Labor Department reported applications for jobless benefits fell to 201,000 for the week ending of January 4th. This figure is the lowest since February of last year. Matthews International Corporation has announced it will sell its SGK Brand Solutions division roughly a month after an activist hedge fund publicly pressured the Northside Corporation to sell off some of its business segments. Matthews will receive $350 million up front and a $40 million common equity stake in the new entity. Futures are mixed. Wednesday, the Dow Industrials gained 106 and the S&P 500 up 9. That's your money now.
Ladies, do you want to feel more connected to our community? Consider joining Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a woman's philanthropic group that has awarded 165 grants totaling more than $17 million in our community. Connect with other women and increase your area impact. Membership deadline is March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware at Barnes Feed Store.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Anecdotally, I saw a number of the American Magic guys up the beach this weekend, past weekend. Do you know where they are on repositioning those assets out of Europe back here?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, it came up in one of our meetings this week. The leadership, not all of the leadership, but I think about 30 American Magic folks are back here now. They are quickly, aggressively moving to start work actually in Warehouse 9, which is the warehouse adjoining Warehouse 10, which is under construction.
Oh, I think I played the wrong clip. Sorry. It looked right. The one I wanted to play was of John Singley asking the mayor if there are any early numbers in for the red light cameras. And in fact, it was, he said yes, and they're enormous. They're really, really big numbers. And that led to our conversation that we started yesterday with the town hall for Mayor D.C. Reeves when he was here in studio with us. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Andrew, thanks for having me.
I don't think you're prepared to yet release an official number yet, but again, suffice to say that we know everybody runs red lights and the number is massive.
Correct. And listen, it's not because the current number that we know about right now after a small sample size is top secret. It's that we don't want to just say a number. Okay, mm-hmm. Mayor, what intersection? At what time?
Right.
Those are fair questions that we want to analyze as well. So that's why we're just trying to not get in front of that. But what I can indicate to you is this will be divided up by how many people are running red lights per hour. That's the type of quantity that we're talking about.
Wow.
This is not every few hours someone runs a red light.
Yeah.
And it really goes back to the conversations we've had. There's a big misperception here that the critiques of this mechanism of public safety is that there's this false presumption that this is in replace of some other competent enforcement
right.
at this point.
That's
right?
a great way to put it. Yeah.
Meaning, we don't have the resources to put human beings 24 hours a day at every one of these intersections. And the irony of another critique is that,
Can pause there because this is an important point. The people who are criticizing the red light cameras seem to want to pretend as if red light enforcement at these traffic intersections is already capable, happening, and being done, and we're going to this instead. No, enforcement of red light running in these intersections is currently zero because these intersections are impossible to police in a legal way. This allows us a way to start policing, and I love the point you made yesterday, that it's not just to start policing, but in the time when we're just doing warnings, it's literally just observing, so we gather data on what is happening and has been happening for years. We just didn't know how to quantify it.
Yeah, the only substantive leverage, so to speak, that an argument critiquing this has is, hey, behind that curtain over here is this false, silent assumption that we're doing it sufficiently right now. But see, once you take that away and say, no, right now, if you go to 9th and Bayou before January 1st, or you go to 9th and Airport before January 1st, we have no enforcement ability, and we have people running red lights all the time.
Right.
And
for people who haven't heard us talk about this or heard me talk about this with Tommy Leiter, and I mean, this is a long-standing conversation, it's because of the requirements of being able to prove that somebody was past the red line when the light turned red, that you are able to see all of the elements of that and position a car effectively in order to actually apprehend that person
Correct.
And issue the ticket. It's just not possible. That's the problem. By the way, this is going to be a 1 hour discussion, not just about this topic, but about any topic you want. Text me your questions for the mayor. This is a town hall, radio town hall version of our normal interview. We're going to go till 8:30 with this. 437-1620. No topic is off the table. If you want to ask him something, I'll ask him, and then he'll talk about it. But we had two we definitely wanted to talk about a little bit in the beginning, which is the red light cameras, and then of course street safety after the New Orleans attack. One last quick thing on the red, actually two real quick. One is one of the pair of cameras was installed wrong,
uh-huh.
right? Davis and Fairfield was supposed to be the east-west, and it got
correct.
Installed as north-south. That's not a city error. That's a vendor error.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. As a matter of fact, I believe we noticed that because I was driving on, and I said, why are those cameras this way? And we've never talked. And it goes back to that, and I think this reinforces where we selected was meticulous. It is not just saying, hey, that's an intersection problem. It's
right.
an approach problem. So we drilled all the way down to not just saying we think Fairfield and Davis is an issue. What we're saying is there is a significantly higher occurrence of red light running east and west on that. So
same at Fairfield and 9th. It's not north south. It's east west.
Correct.
That's the key.
So we're picking and choosing. Our goal isn't to just put them up for the sake of putting them up. Our goal is to pick the places over a decade plus of time that we know for a fact are huge problem areas for us.
And by the way, that is part of this. It's a study. This is a pilot program to see how it works. But it is historical data of crashes, historical data to the degree it's possible of red light running.
That's correct.
But then comparing that with what we get in the warning phase, comparing that with what we get over time at these approaches when we're actually issuing the tickets. No, agreed with all of that. The other thing that I so they're going to reorient. They're going to do
that.
That's correct. Yeah, I'd seen the same thing when I was driving, and I thought it was the other way. Anyway, the other thing that I just want to make sure that we talk about before we do anything else is what happened in New Orleans. Horrible. You talked about it extensively yesterday. I thought your comments were exactly on target, that this is, you know, after Columbine and certainly after Parkland, you know, we dramatically change how we do school safety. After 9/11, we dramatically change how we do airport safety. After Bourbon Street, not that this was the only attack of this type, but it was the one that happened here in America. We are in every city across the country dramatically changing how we do street safety for events. And we already, PPD already has access to these sort of physical impediment devices from FDEM that will stop a car and can be brought away. 18 of them in Panama City that we have access to. Mm-hmm. But they're bringing, or they're devoting like 54 of them to our county, right?
That's correct, yeah. And that was already in process. And so when that takes place, then both Escambia County or neighboring counties as well as the city will have access. You know, that would put a big dent in all of the, you know, overall analysis need that we would have.
And you know, they can be purchased as well for, what, about $6,000 a piece, something like that.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, we got another price a little more, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a combination of, well, how many municipalities are going to want these? You don't necessarily want to have to be shipping them all over because that's inconvenient. But these will dramatically enhance the ability to make street events in Pensacola, whether it's parades or whether it's Seville Square or anywhere else, more safe on sidewalks, because that's exactly what these things are designed to do.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, this should be the point of the city of Pensacola, is everything changed on January 1st. And so that doesn't mean our parade plan isn't good. It doesn't mean our festival plan isn't good, or that we don't have awesome law enforcement officials helping us with that. But the bottom line is, we are looking at this world through a new lens, as we should. And mm-hmm. I believe is the job 1, 2, and 3 of this position that I'm in, more important than Baptist or American Magic or parking or anything else you want to talk about. None of that matters if we aren't a safe community. So we should be, and we are, reanalyzing everything.
Yeah.
Not how we've always done it, or the parade route's been this way for X decades. Let's look at everything. Now, we may change it something. We may not change something. We'll look at that. But we have to look at this through a completely new lens now.
You mentioned it yesterday, but it's fair to mention that big events, you know, like Palafox is one thing. We've done a fair amount to be able to protect that. Seville Square is essentially unprotected, other than the trees, you know. But you said this yesterday, that places like that or other places around the area that might have vulnerabilities, it may become less convenient because we're going to be treating events in those places differently.
Right. And let's use an example everybody can understand who's been down for a parade or anything like that. Let's talk about Main Street during a parade. That is a difficult navigation, Main Street is. Between our police, you got floats coming off. That's a choke point of traffic, a choke point of pedestrian traffic. And if you were a bad actor, probably a ripe area that you'd be looking at.
And by definition, has to allow vehicles because it's the floats.
Right. Correct. And so we ask ourselves, you know, we shut down the roads 2 hours before a parade. Is that enough to have people inside the box of ultimately where pedestrians are freely moving?
Right.
Does it need to be sooner? I mentioned in the press conference yesterday, what right now on ordinance, we need to update it where we can tow a car well ahead of the parade out of Palafox Street.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, we kind of do the courtesy way, which is like we look up the license plate and see, hey, Andrew, you know, come get your car. Can you help us out? I don't know that that's the world we live in reality.
Right.
And we need to be able to get that car well in advance of people lining up and all of those things. So that's what I mean. It's not that, hey, this happened in New Orleans, what we have is insufficient. What it is we woke up on January 1st with a completely different rubric as to what we should consider mm-hmm. public safety. And I think every mayor in the country did. And so what I'm telling, and I've got a column on P&J right now talking about some of the details of that, but what you should expect from this administration is we are going to adapt to the number 1, 2, and 3 job of this administration, which is public safety. And that might mean an extra road close. It might mean extra inconvenience as the memories fade of how we feel right now about New Orleans.
Right.
You know, it'll go back to inconvenience, but I just hope that we have the grace and understanding of people that and we don't know what these changes are going to be. I'm letting the experts figure that out. Right. But the bottom line is there will be some change, and there will be some change in behavior, some inconvenience for some of these major events. But we're doing it because that is our job, and it's more than nostalgia, more than convenience is safety.
And just to also add to the conversation what you said yesterday, which is I'd asked the same question of the police chief when we had him on last week, but we're redesigning Palafox. Of course, all of this will be part of that conversation. Yes. It'd be crazy to put $5 million into a street redesign and not consider sidewalk bollards or whatever needs to be the right solution for this. And the other thing is, just because it turns out to be this insane thing, we found out that the new bollards they're putting in on Bourbon Street are really only rated for a 10-mile-an-hour impact for an accidental gas pedal press. I'm assuming that we'll be doing something more robust than that.
Yeah, we're going to look at all that. A lot of is what the infrastructure that goes in. And understand, bollards, there will be nowhere in this city, whether they're 10-mile, 20-mile, 80-mile, there'll be nowhere in the city that we're going to leave bollards alone. You know, in other words, we're going to have police presence.
Right.
There's you can't just trust the bollards being there. So there might be in some – you know, my guess, Andrew, to your question is we'll probably have a combination of a lot depending on the intersection, depending on how we protect it. Because bollards are not a be-all, end-all of guarantee. It's supposed to slow someone down. It's supposed to deter them. It doesn't necessarily need to stop every potential option because of other security measures that you have in place. So we'll see what that looks like. But we will absolutely be evaluating and balancing between, you know, which intersections need what level of intensity of safety.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple of texts here. Okay. One is more of a thank you. Says, thank you for having the four-way stop crosswalks repainted at Jefferson and Intendencia by Southtown.
Yes.
That assists in pedestrian safety. Can you please repaint the two pedestrian crossings across Tarragona at Church and Zaragoza? I would say also the ones on Main Street have been a long, lingering, neglected visibility issue. You know, many cars go back and forth there, and at night it's very hard to see. I mean, it's one thing if the cars can see them and don't obey, which is its own problem. It's another thing to make sure that they at least can see them, right?
Let me give a 10-second kind of nerd out on the technical aspects of that. Number one, yes, we will absolutely look at those. We'll get those listed if our folks are listening right now. It's the difference between stamped concrete is what you look at. So it looks like pavers, but it's actually the road. Those wear out much quickly. So just so you know, when we're looking at hashtag on Main, when we're looking at the new Palafox, that will not be taking place. We will be putting actual pavers in the ground that give them much longer lifespan, much easier to see. It's a change in material.
Looks nicer.
It looks way nicer. So this administration is not installing any more stamped concrete.
Okay.
But it's what you're seeing is basically, it's road. It's asphalt.
Right.
It's just been painted a different way, and we got to go back and repaint it. So, yeah, we'll get on this.
All right, and if you want to catch the rest of that town hall that we did yesterday, it is up on the podcast page at newsradio923.com. Lots of good information in there. We talked about all kinds of stuff and took, you know, a whole bunch of your questions. That was just kind of the two big things we had to talk about because it's been, you know, obviously big in the news. But, you know, we got to the graffiti bridge warning system. We talked about downtown flooding. I mean, I don't know what we didn't talk about. We talked about a ton of stuff yesterday. And also, by the way, the plan is to start doing that more regularly, like once a month maybe with the mayor. So we just got to figure out which Wednesday we want to do it on. 552 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're getting ready to get that next vehicle, Frontier Motors, they just do it differently. I bought a bunch of used cars in my life. I mean, not, you know, loads, but, you know, enough to have the experience of feeling like, I don't like this much. It's not fun. And I often feel like when you go to a used car place, it's, you know, you're into an adversarial relationship where somebody's trying to pull one over on you or, you know, take advantage of you. And, you know, you just kind of hope you get out of there with a car that works that, you didn't get taken advantage of. I mean, that's how it feels. Icky, unpleasant. At Frontier, never had that sense. It was very easy to deal with them. It was all, like, you know, low-key. It was all easy. And then after we bought the car, this was amazing to me. After we bought the car, they followed up with me twice at 6 months and at a year to ask me if there was anything wrong with the car that they could fix. And they replaced one of the, like, the key didn't work, and they replaced it at their cost a year after we bought the van. What? Who does that? Well, Frontier does. Because they want you to feel comfortable and come back again and again and again. And, of course, we will. No doubt. I mean, that's the idea. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, hear from local community leaders on how Sonny's Barbecue is helping to build a strong Pensacola. With four Sonny's locations serving the News Radio listening area, Navy Boulevard, Pine Forest, 9th Avenue, and Pace. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sonny that Eldon sent you.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at newsradio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
E.F. Hutton talks. People listen.
You know, I don't even know. Is E.F. Hutton still exist?
I have no clue.
I know, but that is one of the most effective ad campaigns ever. To this day, you know it, right? And I don't even know if they're still around. And that is, by the way, that is my favorite song by Weezer. They have a lot of really good songs, Weezer does, but that's one of them. Say It Ain't So is one of my favorites. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
A tentative deal has been reached to avoid a strike that would have shut down major East Coast and Gulf Coast ports next week. Port terminal operators and the Longshoremen's Union reached a deal on Wednesday that would give new protections against workers losing their jobs to automation and wage increases. I feel like we already fought that battle a little while back.
Over and over.
It's... The wildfires in California continuing to just engulf land, over 17,000 acres right now with the Palisades fire, 10,000 with the Eaton fire, and then there's, I believe, four other smaller fires burning as well, just crazy in California right now.
But when you say smaller, I mean, like, the Hearst fire is 900 acres, the Lita fire is 350 acres. I mean, you mentioned Palisades and Eaton. Those are the big ones. The Sunset Fire is 60 acres. Like, all of L.A., you know, North and West L.A. is burning. You know, it's
absolutely.
Just,
I'm just saying smaller in relation to 10,000 acres on the Eaton fire. Yeah.
Right.
A New York judge pushing back the sentencing of former New York Congressman George Santos, who pled guilty to federal wire fraud and identity theft charges, but has not made any payments towards the restitution he owes as part of the plea deal. Santos requested his February sentencing be delayed until August.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Yeah, he says he can't pay, even though, I saw some crazy number, like $400,000 he made on Cameo or something like that. I don't know, some ridiculous thing. It's amazing what people will pay money for. Anyway, I did look up and find that number for the wastewater treatment plant cost, and I was wrong, and I'm sorry. I should always careful to go on memory. It was going to be $12 a month for every $25 million they have to bond, and right now, without finding grant funding, which they may, we'll see if Sandy Woodbury even stays in her job there after the city council basically threw all of her work for the last several years in the toilet. But, you know, if it's $100 million, that means your bill would go up about $50 a month. Just to keep it all in perspective. 557 here on News Radio. Happy days! 557 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. The fuel tank story falling off the F-16? Okay, John. Now, if it falls in your yard, it freaks you out. And
I'd be like, you'd be like, I got
look what I got now!
I know, posting it everywhere, putting it in the garage.
Would you post it, or would you just be like, mine?
Well, I'd be like mine, but, you know, all the identifying marks are off. Don't know anything about it.
That becomes your new coffee table. I mean, it's huge, though, by the way. It's a huge tank. It's a 300-gallon tank. But, you know, not to be the damper on the news story or nothing, but the story here is that a big piece of metal fell off a plane onto nothing, right? Onto land? I mean, maybe some daffodils got the worst of it, you know? Petunias. I don't know. It didn't hit a house. It didn't hit a car. I know one of the stories, like, it was close to a school. there's no kids in the school. It was nowhere near the school. I mean, like, it's just, you know, we're so captivated by the big, scary, weird thing that didn't actually mean anything, you know? It's like, it's almost like, today, you know, a car skidded off the road on I-10. What'd it hit? Nothing. Who died? Nothing. Is anybody injured? No. Okay.
I'm just curious why he did his drop tanks there, you know?
Do you think he did something? He pushed something?
You got to push a button to drop tanks.
Well, or they were maybe not attached. I mean, it's hard to figure out exactly what happened. But anyway, it happened. If it were in my backyard, I'm probably the proud owner of some new F-16 stuff.